Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Detroit, and from age 8, her mom forced her to read Shakespeare's plays every time she listened to rap music. She earned a BA in journalism from Wayne State University. Since 2013, she's been the founding artistic and executive director of the site-specific theater company Shakespeare in Detroit. William Shakespeare, born in 1564, deceased 1616, wrote 38 plays and 154 sonnets. Her name? Sam White. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Sam White, the executive director and founding artistic director of Shakespeare in Detroit. Sam, welcome. Real honor to have you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Jack. I appreciate you.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Sure. So I'm a Detroiter through and through, born and raised. Raised specifically on 7 Mile on the northwest side of Detroit, right off Greenfield. I attended Detroit Public Schools my entire K through 12, so from 5 all the way up until 18. I started at Vandenberg Elementary and ended at Mumford High School, and then went on to eventually study at Wayne State University. And like you so wonderfully mentioned in my intro, graduated from there with a journalism degree. My parents weren't going to support a theater degree. They felt, you know, that it was more important to get something that they, quote, thought was a little bit more stable. And I thought, you know, communications might be pretty closely tied to performance and public speaking. And so I got my degree at Wayne State. And I've lived here most of my life, except for a stint in Las Vegas when I wanted to be a stand-up comedian. But yeah, a Detroiter through and through. My mom is a Detroiter as well. My dad's from Alabama. My mother was a homemaker and pretty strict with us kids, me and my younger brother. And one of the things that she shared with me was theater. She took me actually to this building when I was 8 years old to see A Chorus Line, which was life-changing. But more importantly, and something that really changed the trajectory of my life, was the fact that at 8 years old, she gave me the complete works of William Shakespeare. So we weren't allowed to listen to rap music when I was younger. We actually, even if we tried to listen to it today in her home, that wouldn't be a good thing. And so, me and my brother, we still loved rap music, me specifically. And I was trying to listen to Salt and Pepper's Push It when my mother knocked on the door with a big smelly book, which was the complete works that she had taken out of the attic. We had a lot of books in our home, and so that was one of many, and she gave it to me and told me that if I like lyrics so much, I'd have to read that book. And so I did that. I started reading that book at 8. Had no idea what I was reading. The words looked and sounded funny, but I finished it because she told me to in 8 years by the time I was 16. But by that time, just out of repetition and spending so much time with the plays, I fell in love with them. And so fast forward to today, and you have Shakespeare in Detroit, which has become my life's passion and my life's work. Yes.
What's the biggest thing you learned from mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from dad?
From mom, the biggest thing that I learned was that there is a big wide world out there. We didn't travel a lot when I was a kid. We couldn't necessarily always afford to do so. It depended on how the auto industry was going, frankly, because my dad worked in a factory. But because of books, because of theater, because of my mother, we had traveled everywhere. By the time I was 18, you know, my mind's eye anyway, I had been to Egypt and Rome and London and all of these places because I was a ferocious reader by way of my mother, which was fantastic. And then from my dad, who shined cars for most of his life, he worked for General Motors, and then eventually got his own business where he was a vendor or a contractor for GM and Ford, I believe. And he would shine the mirrors and the bumpers of vehicles, and apparently he was very good at it. I learned my work ethic from him, which is extremely important when you're trying to do something as complicated as building a Shakespeare company in a very, very industrial town. We have this beautiful large theater that we're sitting on top of right now at the Fisher Theater. But there's a lot of work to be done in the field of theater and performing arts in Detroit. But because of my dad, I know that everything takes hard work. And I'm just fortunate enough that, you know, I don't have to break my back like he did, you know, physically to make ends meet. So I also learned gratitude from my father.
Sam, as a young girl, did you have those executive director skills and genes in you?
I think so. When I was 8 years old, we used to have parties at our house because we were like the only house on our block that had a swimming pool. That was rare for our neighborhood. And so I would plan all of these parties when I was 8 and literally pass out itineraries to all the kids. You know, 1 o'clock hot dogs, 2 o'clock swimming, 2:30 dancing, 3 o'clock ice cream. Most of them would end up leaving early because they felt restricted by the itinerary. So I qualify myself as a lifelong producer, but certainly it's been a learning curve actually doing this as an adult and really finding out how to work the nuts and bolts of being a executive director. Yeah.
Sam White, what is BARD? B-A-R-D.
Yeah. Well, BARD, I mean, when I say BARD, I mean Shakespeare, William Shakespeare specifically. But the BARD can be any kind of renowned writer or poet. You know, many would say that August Wilson was a BARD. I would qualify other people like you could possibly say Margaret Atwood is a BARD, you know, as a poet and as an author. And so, but I think the most, if we had to qualify someone as the most global, well-known poet and playwright, I would think that most people would probably say, at least in the Western world, William Shakespeare.
You got a BA degree in journalism from Wayne State University. Mm-hmm. You worked for the Oakland Press as a freelance journalist. Mm-hmm. You worked for the Ford Content Factory as a writer, mm-hmm. Between the Lines, freelance writer. Mm-hmm. What do all great writers, Sam, mm-hmm. have in common?
Well, it's very similar to theater. You know, it's all storytelling. It's all tapping into the humanity of what makes us who we are, whether it's being a journalist and journaling history and telling people stories, or if it's, you know, revealing what it's like to be a caretaker in King Lear, you know, for his three daughters, Goneril, Regan, and Cordelia. It's all kind of the same thing, just manifested in different ways or on different platforms. But for me, it all, you know, it made sense to get that journalism degree because I immediately saw the ties and the parallels between the two.
We're talking to Sam White, who's the founding artistic and executive director of Shakespeare in Detroit. When we come back, we'll ask about this guy named William Shakespeare. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Sam White, who started Shakespeare in Detroit. Sam?
Yeah.
William Shakespeare. Mm. Tell us about him.
Well, there's so much to say about somebody who, you know, we're still talking about more than 400 years later after his death. But I think the thing that most impresses me or makes an impression on me and inspires me every day is the fact that William wasn't just an extraordinary writer and actor and all of those things, but he was also an entrepreneur. And so for a very long time, he would write for the queen and do things at like her behest and what she wanted to see on stage. But eventually he became a theater owner, which is when he started to actually make some money and could hire his friends and people that he knew to put on the plays that he was writing. And he had a lot of struggles in life that a lot of people have. He struggled with his marriage and spending time with his family and all of that. And he was really great, but he was also very flawed, which I think is something that I can relate to and a lot of people can relate to. And sometimes when I'm having a difficult moment or a difficult time producing a play or a difficult season, I often think of him and what he might have thought to do as a solution. And I think that has kept me going in many occasions, especially just as someone who's trying to do something that hasn't been done before in the city of Detroit anyway. And so I think a lot of people talk about his writing and they talk about, you know, his beautiful sonnets and his 37 plays. But for me, the thing that's most impressive of anybody who decides to become an entrepreneur is fortitude and stick-to-itness. And it obviously worked for him, and he has no idea, obviously, but the work that he put in, it lasted. It outlasted him. And so his works have outlived him at this point and continue to play a major role in people's lives, including me, you know, a little girl from Detroit whose mother put her on punishment and read the books and it changed her life. And so the entrepreneur and the consistency of William Shakespeare is what I think people should definitely look up to and admire most about him.
Speaking of his work outlasting his life, as you mentioned, he died in 1616, 403 years ago. Mm-hmm. How is he still so relevant today?
Yeah, I think the only thing that has changed from that time till now are the clothes. People don't change that much. Maybe he didn't have Instagram, but and Facebook and things like that. But the things that make us who we are and the things that we need, like love, basic things like food and shelter and comfort, and we need to engage with community, and we all go through things like I mentioned King Lear earlier, where you have three daughters who are trying to figure out what's the next step in their lives as their father, Lear, is at the end of his. And then you also have stories like Hamlet, who's confronted with legacy and how to go on with his life. And then you have stories like Macbeth, where you're talking about things like envy and violence, which are things that we can certainly relate to, I would say, even on a more deeper level now, having access to things like television or the internet and whatnot, or things like Romeo and Juliet, where for teenagers things happen fast and furiously, like falling in love. You can fall in love in 3 days. I think that's pretty accurate, especially after having just worked with teenagers. And other stories which take us out of reality, like A Midsummer Night's Dream, where you're surrounded by fairies. And so I think the thing that makes Shakespeare so resonant even now is the fact that there was something really real and authentic and tangible about the human experience, that no matter whether we're in jeans and t-shirts or we're in a ruff, you know, with pantaloons, it all still matters then and now.
38 plays, 154 sonnets. Let's highlight a couple of the plays.
Yeah.
Number one, King Lear.
King Lear. And I should say that some people only count the canon as 37, because some of the plays are controversial, like The Two Noble Kinsmen. King Lear, you know, that's a story that I really love now, especially as a caretaker for my parents. It's I didn't like it all the time. When I was younger, I didn't really have that big of a connection to it because it wasn't relevant to the place that I was in. But anybody who's ever had a sick parent or someone in their life that needed care and you've been trying to figure out how to navigate that, that's a beautiful, heavy, but beautiful story. And that's what makes it so powerful. I just saw Glinda Jackson, who's a wonderful English actor whose work we've all been enjoying for the last 60 years, as King Lear on Broadway back in April, and her performance was stunning. And it was so funny because it was a very contemporary production directed by a pretty world-renowned, or at least nationally renowned, director called Sam Gold. And it really kind of penetrates your heart just the way that Lear and Lear's children, daughter specifically, kind of navigate the space of end of life. So I think for anybody who's a caretaker or has witnessed caretaking or has been the beneficiary of caretaking, it's a really powerful, beautiful story to read and, most importantly, see if you get a chance to see it live.
Romeo and Juliet.
I'm currently sick of that play, but because I just directed it for a group of high school students, so I spent, you know, every day with it for the past, for me, it was 6 months, with the kids, though, 12 weeks. You know, if for most people who aren't Shakespeare nerds like me, Romeo and Juliet, everybody knows that play, you know, and there's so many references. I actually, my uncle, who is no longer with us, but his name was Bob Hamilton, wrote a song called Just Like Romeo and Juliet that the Reflections sang.
Just like Romeo and Juliet.
So I feel like I've had a connection to Romeo and Juliet for even before I was born. But it's one of those stories. It's a romance tale. It ends in tragedy because the kids end up killing themselves, which isn't good. But if you're going to have a gateway into Shakespeare for most people, Romeo and Juliet is it, because it's so pop culture. It's in so many songs and it's referenced in different books and in movies and all of that.
Titus Andronicus.
I like that one. That one is really cool just because it's so bloody. If you're a fan of horror, and I like Stephen King, you know, who's obviously a contemporary bard himself, and you like kind of things that scare you, Titus Andronicus is it. I mean, at the end, you have a character who loses her tongue, you know, which is pretty hardcore. So if, you know, people often think of Romeo and Juliet, which we were just talking about, as being the staple of what Shakespeare is, but he was one of the very first horror writers. So if you like something really scary and you want to snuggle up, you know, during your holiday season with a book that's very interesting to read, and I would think one of the king of horror books, read Titus Andronicus. I think it's a good read. You don't even have to just see it as a play. It's a good read.
One more, Cymbeline.
Yeah, Cymbeline. Cymbeline is just a quirky play. I like it. It's quite underrated. I think a lot of people don't talk about it when they think about Shakespeare's canon. It's mostly Macbeth or Hamlet or Romeo and Juliet, Midsummer Night's Dream. Cymbeline is just one. It's a story about a really, I think, authentic, powerful young woman who is deciding to make a life of her own and fall in love with who she wants to. And I think that's always a beautiful story to tell. Yes.
All right, let's talk about sonnets.
Sure.
I didn't know any sonnets growing up, but I did know a Rennie Stennett was a second baseman for the Pittsburgh Pirates for about 10 years in the 70s. One day, Sam, against my Cubs, he went 7-for-7. There's only been 3 men in the history of baseball to get 7 hits in a game.
Yeah.
They beat us that day 22-0, Sam.
Oh,
that's
no.
Baseball, Sam. Okay. What is a sonnet?
It's a poem. It's you know, if you're someone who doesn't know iambic pentameter, which is just the meter that Shakespeare is written in, with the 10 syllables, or what we call the 5 de-dums, de-dum, 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 which is the rhythm of the text. Sonnets are a great laboratory for learning kind of the rhythm of Shakespeare. But they're just poems, short poems.
Here's our own Mark Blackwell, not reciting, but performing. Sonnet number 18.
Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate. Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May, and summer's leaf hath all too short a date. Sometime too hot the eye of heaven shines, and often is his gold complexion dimmed, and every fair from fair sometime declines, by chance or nature's changing course untrimmed. But thy eternal summer shall not fade, nor lose possession of that fair thou owest. Nor shall death brag thou wanderest in his shade, when in eternal lines to time thou growest. So long as men can breathe or eyes can see, so long live this, and this gives life to thee.
That was Mark Blackwell, Sonnet 18. We're with Sam White, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with Sam White, the founder of Shakespeare in Detroit. How did it come to be, Sam?
Yeah, well...
Isn't that kind of like Shakespearean? How did it come to be, Sam?
Well, I got the idea when I was living in Las Vegas. I wanted to be a stand-up comedian, but that wasn't working out. So I ended up taking a job at KNPR, which is the affiliate, the NPR affiliate in Las Vegas and also Henderson, Nevada. And one of the things that they would do with listeners every year is take them to the Utah Shakespeare Festival. This was in 2008. And so my friend who was in charge, who worked with me, who was in charge of that bus trip, asked me if I wanted to go. And I said, yeah, because I was a fan of Shakespeare, obviously, by way of my mom. And also, at that point, I had been an actor for a while, too. But I said, yeah. And we went, and in the middle of nowhere, literally nowhere, in Cedar City, Utah, there was this lovely Shakespearean festival that was just filled with so much life and energy and beauty in the middle of the mountains. It was quite stunning. And I thought, okay, if they can do this in the desert, we may be able to do this in Detroit. When I came back to Detroit, it was the end of 2008, and it was a bad time to come back to the city because GM had taken a huge hit, which impacted the economy, not just here, but around the country. And so it wasn't the time to start a Shakespeare company then. But a few years later, I heard about Tech Town, which is a place for usually not artists, but that was the point of me going so I could have an experience surrounded by other entrepreneurs who had nothing to do with theater. And I wrote a business plan in 2011 or 12. And then eventually we started performing for kids who were getting chemotherapy in local children's hospitals. But in 2013, we found the funding to do a full on stage performance at Grand Circus Park, which is not too far from here, down Woodward. And we didn't know if anybody would show up because right before we went up, 4 weeks before we had our first performance, which was Othello, the city filed for bankruptcy. And our largest arts institution, which is the DIA, was having a rough time and was about to have a garage sale on many of their artifacts and paintings and all of that. So that was a bad sign for a newly founded arts organization. But 500 people showed up for the performance and they've continued to come. And so here we are.
You're a site-specific theater.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, this was, this was right before Detroit became, I would think a new hub for people from around the country, like from Brooklyn and other places to come to. And so it was very difficult at that time. It wasn't as difficult, rather, to find space. There was so much available space. That isn't the case today in 2019 with so many people now inhabiting spaces around the city. But when we started, space was readily available, and I thought it might be cool to reintroduce people to some of the historical sites in the city by infusing them with theater, because our name is Shakespeare in Detroit. We're as much about Shakespeare as we are the city. And so it seemed like a perfect marriage to introduce people to the beautiful architecture in the city while also sharing these wonderful stories that William Shakespeare wrote. And so that's how we became a site-specific company.
Anybody that's known you would say she walks to the tune of a different drummer. So when you came back here and said, I'm going to start this Shakespearean theater in Detroit, when you don't think of Shakespeare and Motown and cars being connected.
Yeah.
So a lot of people had to tell you, with all due respect, Sam, you are crazy on this one. Where did you get the fight to keep going?
Yeah, well, I think people still tell me I'm crazy. I've had, people tell me no all the time. I had like three people tell me no just yesterday. But the thing that I think is my responsibility is to share and, for lack of a better word, educate people on why Shakespeare matters or why theater matters as a whole. You know, I think one of the things that was a huge mistake for the city, and I think I don't even have to prove this because obviously that we had a rough time in 2013. We filed for bankruptcy. One of the things that and not everyone, because we do have some great arts organizations, just not as robust as places like Chicago or New York. But one of the things that's overlooked is that 5 million Americans are employed by arts and culture institutions, according to Forbes magazine this year, right? And it's one of the most booming industries in the world. And the thing about storytelling and about cars that makes most sense in the way that they tie together is stories are transportation just the way cars are. The way that a car might get get you from plan, you know, from point A to point B is the same thing that a story does. If you're sitting in a theater and you're there, you're in reality, but eventually when that curtain raises, you're taken to a totally different place. And so just as classic and life-changing as Henry Ford, you know, is the way that he impacted the way that we get around is the same thing that William Shakespeare did. He changed the way people relate to and tell stories, and I think it's a perfect match. Even if you take that out of it, again, it's the economics of having a robust cultural landscape. You know, we have to be more than just cars because we are more than cars.
How has Shakespeare in Detroit progressed in the years since its inception?
Yeah, well, we definitely, a lot of people know who we are at this point. You know, no one knew who we were when we popped up at Grand Circus Park in 2013. So we've had a lot of beautiful partnerships like the Detroit News, people like Nolan Finley, who has been a really wonderful advocate for the work that we do. And we have friends at other places like Strategic Staffing Solutions, who have been amazing partners in Greektown and Chemical Bank and Deloitte. So we didn't have that sort of support when we first started. But, you know, I always say we're still very young. We're only working on our eighth season and we have a long way to go. But surely I think the awareness for the company is something that wasn't happening in the beginning, and it's there now. Now it's just a matter of making sure we can be around for the next eight seasons.
If you want to learn more, www.shakespeareindetroit.com. We're talking to Sam White, the founding artistic and executive director of Shakespeare in Detroit. Sam, what makes a great director?
I think that I'm still a pretty young director, but I observe and I witness, and I think I'm a student of greater directors. And I think the thing that makes them so great is that they are wonderful listeners. Actors, especially trained actors, you know, I know a lot of people watch TV or they go to the theater and they think, I can do that. And in their heads, I'm sure they can. But most actors, unless they're just gifted and those happen every now and then. But for the most part, actors are trained. And so you can trust them when they show up in a space. And I think the best directors just hold space for them to be brilliant and to do their best work rather than taking up space and telling them how to do something. You offer ideas and you work as a collaborator with an actor rather than a dictator. And I think that's what makes someone either a good director or not.
All right. What makes a great actor?
I think a great actor tells the truth. Most people think that acting is pretending, but I think actors tell the truth. You know, I think the best actors are probably not the people you see on stage. People walk around every day pretending to be something else or pretending to have something else that they don't have. And I think the thing that makes actors so special is that they never lost that childhood ability to really be authentic and real. And I think when you see an amazing actor like a James Earl Jones, or you see a Christopher Plummer or a Maggie Smith, the thing that makes them, sure, they're reading lines from a script, but the thing that connects you with the characters that they inhabit is the fact that they're able to reach into the truth of who these people are and reveal them. And that's much more real than sometimes the things you'll see on the street. Absolutely.
We're talking to Sam White, who's got many, many plays still in her future as director. But we're going to ask her someday when she meets Shakespeare in heaven, what is she going to ask him? And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Jack Rasula, host of WJR's Anything Is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol.
Anything is possible.
I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Sam White. Sam, Someday when you die and you hear the six greatest words anyone can ever hear, well done, good and faithful servant, I think Shakespeare will be there. Billy Shakespeare will be there waiting for you. Mm-hmm. One, can we call him Billy Shakespeare? And two, what are you going to say to him?
Yeah, you can call him whatever you want to. Billy Shakes, Bill, anything. I think if he and I met in heaven, and thank you for assuming I'm going there. I appreciate that, Jack. I would have probably a really long conversation with him about everything that has happened at Shakespeare in Detroit. And I might ask him if he thinks that I did a good job. And, you know, now to come to think of it, if people keep telling me no, then I might actually be in heaven sooner than later because the stress is going to kill me. But I think he and I would have a long discussion about Shakespeare in Detroit. And I would ask him a ton of questions about what it was like when he started his own theater. You know, what was it like when he showed a play for the first time? What was it like when people saw Romeo and Juliet for the very first time? What was that like? How did they react? What inspired him to write King Lear? What inspired him to write things like The Tempest? Or I would really just love to hear the stories behind the stories and how he got to that place. And then I would want to, you know, tell him about the impact that he made on my life personally. And I would ask if he's seen how his work has been shared the world over. I mean, in so many languages, not just in the English language, and from every corner of the planet, which is quite phenomenal. I would ask and really inquire if he knows how important he became once he died. And then if he's a little bit bitter about that, you know, because his work doesn't have any copyrights anymore. And I'm sure that might irritate him, but I would want to know. Plenty to ask.
All right. You've told us that a theater director has a lot of stress in his or her life. Mm-hmm. But you start working with kids as early as third grade. Yeah. No stress when you're working with third graders.
That's so funny. Well, you know, I have to tell you, I'm going to speak transparently to you, Jack. You know, many of my friends, and I've been tempted a couple of times to move to New York, you know, or to move to Los Angeles or even Chicago to do this work, because my life as an artist would be much more easier than it is in Detroit. But I've chosen to stay. And the thing that keeps me here, sure, we have wonderful professional productions that I'm really proud of. But the thing that inspires me is the work that we do with 8 to 17-year-olds. You know, it's pretty great. Just last week we were working at the Bog School, which is almost on the east side of Detroit, right off Mac, and then also Clippert Academy, which is in southwest Detroit. And the way that those students expressed what iambic pentameter is with such ease, you know, it's a proof point to the difference between implicit learning and explicit learning. Implicit, which is more sponge-like learning, which usually happens with students or kids at 8 years old, because that's one of those ages where life really impacts them and they're pretty much going to be who they are at 8. And also finding the difference between teaching them and a 30-year-old Shakespeare, where there's explicit learning, where it's more analytical and more resistance to the idea of this poetic writing. And so anytime I show up in a kid who otherwise has never even been to a theater, not even been to Sesame Street Live, not even to see Elmo, we see their eyes light up when they find out that they know exactly how to recite the prologue from Romeo and Juliet. These are kids from neighborhoods like mine. There's nothing else in the world that's more rewarding as far as what I do than being able to share something that changed my life at 8 years old with another 8-year-old.
If you want to learn more, www.shakespeareindetroit.com. Sam White, share, if you will, with us the Shakespeare STEAM, STEAM.
Yeah, so that's the work that we share with kids in school. So it's the science of lighting and production, the technology of sound design, the engineering or construction of a form, the art of classical performance, and then the mathematics of building a set. So a third grader could do something like a professional set designer would do, and they create models. Their models, though, are made out of popsicle sticks and Play-Doh. And it's really cool to watch them figure out how measurements and weight impact whether one side of the set will stand up with the other. And so that's a beginning. That's a teaser for what's to come when they're in high school, when they're actually banging on nails to build a larger set. So that's how we start with the popsicles and the Play-Doh with our kids at Boggs. And then once we get to high schools like the Detroit School of Arts or the new school at Mary Grove, it's a larger set that they're actually working with. And that's that mathematic component. And then there's also literacy pillars. All of our kids, if you can read Shakespeare, you're literate. because you have to learn syntax, modulation, alliteration, enunciation, pronunciation, and comprehension. And the thing that makes it easy to become literate by way of Shakespeare is that it's not prose, which is just everyday language. It's the verse or the poetry and the rhythm and the rhyme that make it so digestible for kids, whether they're 8 years old or 17 years old. And so there's that literacy component, but there's also those vocational skills and tools that they're getting. And that's what makes the work so wonderful for me.
Shakespeare against cancer.
Yeah, well, that's where we started. Even before Shakespeare in Detroit existed, we were doing Shakespeare against cancer. My aunt had passed away in 2012 of cancer, and she loved kids. And so myself and some of my actor friends started performing at places like Beaumont Children's Hospital or Children's Hospital down here, or the Center for Exceptional Families, which is in Dearborn. And Fusion, if people don't know, chemo is very boring. And it's really boring for a kid. You're just sitting there. And so while they were sitting there, we would perform vignettes of, say, A Midsummer Night's Dream, where you have fairies come in. I think, you know, chemo isn't so boring when a fairy's talking to you about magic. And so that's where it started for us, as an ode to my aunt, and also to help some kids to take away some of that boringness and that weight and the heavy weight for a 5 or 3-year-old who might be getting chemotherapy.
We met in September in the Amnesia Room, top floor of the Motor City Casino, and you had gotten a phone call from Nolan Finley. Tell us about that phone call and that night.
Yeah, well, Nolan called me. And Nolan is a friend. As I said, the Detroit News has been extremely supportive of Shakespeare in Detroit, even beyond the award that I got, which was Michiganian of the Year for 2019. And I have to say, it was a beautiful cohort. President Scheisel from the University of Michigan, Jerry Anderson from DTE, a few other wonderful people, and then me. And, Nolan told me that that I was going to be honored as one of the class members of this particular cohort. And I was over the moon about it. And then we showed up to Amnesia a few weeks ago to actually receive the awards. And it was a beautiful night. Nolan was a great host. The Detroit News were beautiful hosts of the event. And the cohort was extraordinary, I think. And it was a lovely evening. And my mom got to come with me, and my brother and my niece. And so it was it may have been one of my favorite nights this year, truly. Yeah.
Sam White, if you Google a millennial who walks to the tune of a different drummer, a picture of you comes up.
Thanks, Jack.
Why you?
I'm a millennial, but I'm an old millennial. And we're different than the younger ones, I should say that. The younger ones we like, but we're a little bit different. I think, too, the fact that I'm my parents' second set of kids. So they had kids before my brother and I. And then when they got married, they had my brother and myself. And so I think when you have parents who are what people would consider older parents, it exposes you to different things. And so my upbringing was a little bit different than, say, my fellow millennials. And I cherish that. You know, it was kind of great being able to go to the theater, or come to this theater, Fisher Theater, quite often, and also to have a mother who was very invested in her kids' upbringing because she was at home all the time. And, you know, I was named Samantha because my father loved Bewitched. So it was just a totally different generation that I was raised by, and I think maybe that's what makes me a little bit different, my parents.
Well, you got a special little nose, you know, like that Bewitched. So, Sam White, you got a great combination of healthy confidence and humility. Keep using those to do great things.
Thanks, Jack.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.
Believe in yourself.